And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about you, your aura. Simply change your aura and change your life. It's a guide to unfolding some power within you. And we'll be back with Dimitri Moraitis on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast as we talk about your aura. Dimitri Moraitis back with us, co-founder, executive director of the renowned Spiritual Arts Institute. Very elegant speaker. Accomplished teacher, spiritual healer as well. He wrote this book, Change Your Aura, Change Your Life, along with Barbara Martin. And here is Dimitri, first of all, on Coast to Coast. Dimitri, hello there.
Well, hi, George. How are you?
Good. Looking forward to this.
Oh, likewise. Great to be on the show again.
Perfect time to talk about it. Nighttime, people are still up, some people in bed just listening. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And people are beginning to become more and more aware of auras. I'm beginning to hear more people talk about this than I've ever. Are you sensing that too?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with the interest in sort of the idea of energy medicine and that energy can affect your health and well-being, and that more and more people are kind of exploring this. So, you know, there was a time where no one knew about this. It was sort of a secret thing. And like you said, now it's a much, much more common understanding of it.
Well, you and Barbara have done a great job with this book. The illustrations are fantastic.
It was painstaking. You know, the illustrator was going a little nuts because he wanted to do these fancy embellishments. And he said, no, this is not imagination. This is like Grey's Anatomy. You know, the liver has to look like a liver, So the aura has to look like an aura.
Well, the color scheme, too, that you did, finally put into perspective the colors of auras and what they mean. You know, when it's white, you say it's purity and illumination. When it's black, it's hatred and evil.
Right.
That's perfect.
Right. And we have to realize we are color. You know, we are a being of many colors, and the idea is we're trying to brighten the colors. You know, we're trying to get stronger, but that's what we call enlightenment. We're trying to become more the enlightened. And sure, we may get angry and frustrated at times, but those are like passing clouds in the aura. And you can change the aura, thank God. That's the whole reason we wrote the book. We're not never stuck with an energy field the way it is. And you can change your aura. And one of the key ways is meditation, which is one of the big things we talk about in the book.
Explain what an aura is.
Sure. Well, we know there's physical energy, you know, obviously, but there is a energy behind the physical energy, which is the spiritual energy. And the aura is the individual expression of this universal life energy. So it is a vibratory essence, and it surrounds all living things. And actually, even inanimate objects have little auras because there is a life force in the atoms that are holding, let's say, even a piece of wood together or a horseshoe or something like that. But as I'm doing things, let's say a scientist in the throes of discovery or research is going to attract certain universal life energies, and this will create a type of energy in what we call the aura. An artist will be attracting different energies because they're doing different types of activities. So everything you're thinking, your feeling, your state of health, your creative energy, even your career, financial situation, all these things have a reflection in the aura. It is sort of the energetic blueprint of your soul.
And clearly we're born with the aura, right? We don't develop it.
Absolutely. But it does develop over. It's not born full speed, full force. It actually phases in. The first 7 years, there's an old expression, give me the first 7 years of a person's life and you can have the rest. Because a lot of the character traits, the basic character traits, are established in those very important formative years. But also the aura is becoming more set in those 7 years. And up to seven, it's extremely pliable, and it has to be because we have to learn so much so fast, how we learn our language, how we learn to walk, how we learn to interact with people. And that openness allows that to happen. At seven, the aura becomes a little more fixed. You can still change things, but now it's kind of the imprint, shall we say, is there. And then it continues to develop, actually, all the way to the full aura engages itself at 16. And then from the spiritual perspective, you're an adult. You're fully accountable for your actions at that point because, shall we say, you're fully endowed. You have your full power, shall we say, at that point.
Now, with the auras, what do they look like?
Well, first of all, the key thing is color. They're very colorful. And there are many, you know, people think, oh gosh, am I a blue aura? Am I a green aura? Well, we're multifaceted. We have many aspects to our nature. We're not one-sided. So the aura is not one-sided. The aura has many pieces to it. It has sort of an anatomy. And there are three basic, shall we say, shapes to the aura, and a lot of the energies are moving in and around it. There's what we call the rounded shape, which is most of us is that. This is the aura in evolution. So this means it's a mixed. We have these wonderful qualities in the aura, and we have, you know, not so good that we're trying to work out, and isn't that sort of the human condition? We can be brilliant but extremely impatient, or loving, but we don't stand up for ourselves. And so we can have both of these qualities at the same time that we're working through. We can also, if we really, unfortunately, make every mistake in the book and really do some very hurtful and, you know, destructive things, you can degrade the aura to the point that it actually almost becomes squared. It becomes so constricted. You know, in the 60s, you used to say, he's a square, she's a square. Well, that can actually sort of happen, and we call that the devolved aura, because there's more dark than light energy in there, and that's not obviously a good situation. And then there's the ideal aura, the aura we're all aiming to reach. It's called the pointed oval, and it is the enlightened aura. It's the aura where we've worked through our human blemishes, and yes, we can work through these things. Sometimes we like to identify with our faults too much, not realizing that they're just faults that we need to work out of. It's not part of our basic who we are. And when we work through these things, eventually the aura becomes extremely well organized, the colors become very bright, and it actually becomes sort of this elongated, pointed oval shape, and that's the mark of a spiritually mature person and something we're all aiming to reach.
If there are breaks in the aura, Dimitri, does that mean the person's sick?
Well, there can be definite disturbances, yes, and it will show up. Now, if a person's sick, it'll usually show as a gray, a devitalizing energy, and it can show in what are called the health lines, and it can also show in the actual area of distress. So if I have a problem with my kidneys, the gray can show around the kidneys, and yeah, you better get to a doctor there, you know, get going, because if the illness hasn't already generated, it will very soon when that devitalization has occurred.
All right. Now, the aura itself generally has just one color to it, right? But it does change in somebody's life.
Well, if there is a primary ray, like you're saying, that is one color. But actually, there's many colors because, for example, there are divisions of the aura. So there's a part of the aura that's related to our thinking, another part related to our feeling nature. So those can be different colors. There's a part related to our talents. How exciting is that? The creative talent shows up as this electric blue if it's strong. Then there's a spiritual division, which really does show how much you've taken the time to really develop your spiritual nature. There's a color division, which shows our character traits. And what we tell people is just do good. You know, even if you're not getting patted on the back for it, do what you know is right, because it's going to be reflected in your aura. And all these things together kind of, and then there's the chakras too, which is a whole fascinating study by itself. And you put all this together and it kind of puts this composite picture of you, of who you are.
This photography called, what is it, Kirlian photography?
Kirlian, yeah.
Kirlian,
yes, yes.
That captures the aura. How does that work?
Well, that's a very interesting history, because the real Kirlian photography, the what started in Russia, it was a couple and their name was Kirlian. They started doing, they were engineers, and they started noticing things, and so they would put something on a photographic plate and run an electrical current through it, and it would produce sort of this corona around a finger or hand, but they noticed it was changing according to person's mood. And probably one of the most startling things, which really got people interested, is they would take, for example, a leaf, a freshly cut leaf, they would put it on this plate, they would electrify it, and it would have this aura around the edge. But then they would take a leaf, they would cut it, and it didn't happen every time. It was a mystery why it happened sometimes and didn't. But they would put the cut leaf on the plate, and they would run the current, and under the right conditions, the entire outline of of the leaf would be there.
Even though it was gone?
Even though half of it was gone.
Huh.
Yeah. Now, some have tried to poo-poo that and say, oh, that was just moisture on the film plate, but those people did not see the experiment because there was nothing put on that plate until the leaf was already cut and then put on there. And now, metaphysically, what I would say is there could have been this, what we call an etheric counterpart. We have our physical body, but we actually have what's called an etheric counterpart. So let's say if I were to lose my leg in an accident, I would lose my physical leg, but actually I would not lose my etheric leg. It would still be there. And of course, we've heard people having the phantom limb effect. They've lost a leg or an arm, and sometimes they feel like it's still there.
It's still there, still attached to them.
That's true. And in a sense, it still is. Spirit, you know, on the etheric level. This is one of the reasons that, transplants can also work because, okay, your physical liver is taken out, but this etheric one is still there. And as the transplant is put in, of course, if everything is working right, that etheric liver will help to keep the body moving as it should. So this was a very fascinating study. The modern cameras, though, are not I do have to qualify, the modern ones you see at the, you know, it's sort of like taken with a Polaroid. That's not really Krillian photography. That's kind of a hybrid. They took computers and they tried to make it look a little bit like an aura, but it's not the original Krillian photography. And that, you know, I hope more research is done there because that was very promising when it was starting out.
There are some people who can see auras, Edgar Cayce being one of them.
Right. And he didn't even know. He saw it very involuntarily. He was such an interesting person because his whole career was almost like he didn't understand what was happening. You know, he did all those readings, and he was as surprised as anybody at some of the things he was saying in those trance states. But you don't, you know, seeing auras is wonderful, and it is something you can learn, although it takes a lot of effort. But the main thing is to work with the aura. You know. In other words, if you work with the energy and you start to see the effects in your life, then that's your validation that these things are worth doing. And our strong emphasis is to meditate, you know, to work with these energies, call on them. You can actually change your aura by calling on the energy you feel you need. If you're sad, you can call on the deep rose pink, which is a loving energy. If you feel you need more confidence in your life, you can call in a gold ray. And these things will have an effect. And yes, sometimes if you're in the right frame of mind, you will actually see the energy coming in, but more importantly, you will see the effect in yourself as you're applying these things in your life, and that's what this is really all about.
Dimitri, does science get involved in any of this? Does it try to study auras?
There are a lot of intelligent people in the scientific community that are trying to really look at this more honestly, and you know, yes, there is some resistance on that. Where it seems to be making inroads right now is in the healing therapies. Actually, we have a technique that we teach of healing, and it was there was an article published in the National Center for Biotechnological Information, and there was some serious research done by a top hospital in Israel on the effects of these spiritual healing and alternative therapies on cancer patients. And they found after a two-year carefully studied that there was profound positive effects, helping people deal with these very difficult situations by adding these complementary, you know, techniques. So we only hope that more work is going to be done like that. Of course, we know the story of the Dalai Lama, who in the 80s went to the scientific community and said, I want to do research on meditation. So they did, a 30-year research on these Buddhist monks that were, you know, practicing meditating on compassion. And it was scientifically shown that there were profound changes in the brain patterns and from these many years of meditation. And they actually showed that if you meditated regularly, let's say daily, for half an hour every day for 3 months, there would be a noticeable effect on your brain patterns and the neurotransmitters through that act of meditation. So it's slowly happening. You know, it's slowly coming into the community. And I think there are just more people that are saying there has to be, it's kind of like you started the show here, there has to be more answers to things than what we're seeing right now. There has to be other things going on. And I think more and more people are just becoming more awakened. They're more alert to this. and they want more answers.
The color scheme that you've got, from the illumination to the dark, why does it work that way? Because it's obvious, it does.
Right. Well, the thing to remember is, in the spiritual spectrum, the light is not just light, let's say, that illuminates a face. It's actually consciousness. The spiritual energy is transmitting states of consciousness to us. So what happens is, yes, there are these beautiful illumined states, and there are these dark states. I mean, the terrorist that does this terrible thing, it's not the love of God that they're doing it for. It's the perceived object of their, you know, of their resistance, of their what's interfering, their hatred for their, that's what's driving them to do that.
It's like the outside of their soul, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, obviously they're sort of conditioned to do it, but they have to have extreme hatred. You look at what tyrants have done through the ages, they have to motivate people through dark emotion to pursue whatever they're doing, and they have to work very hard to sustain that. So through these dark energies, you can propel people to certain acts, but it won't last, you know, because it's not part of the natural part of who we are. Now, Barbara's story about how she saw, how she learned about the meanings of color is fascinating because, you know, she was basically born seeing the auras, but she didn't know what they meant. And I love this story. I know she won't mind my telling it now, but when she was 4 years old, her father was a Greek Orthodox priest, and he also would build churches, so he was this brilliant man. And they were inaugurating a cathedral, and the archbishop was there, and the bishops were there. It was just a big deal. And, of course, her family was prominently there. And this four-year-old girl that can see auras is looking at the archbishop, and instead of seeing the beautiful colors, she's seeing these rather grotesque colors. And she can't figure out why it looks so menacing. But the bishops on either side of him had these radiant auras. So at the end, when you're supposed to go up there and, you know, kiss the hand of the officiating, in this case, archbishop, you know, little Barbara blurted out in front of the whole congregation, "Oh, no, I'm not kissing his hand. He's a monster. He eats children." And, of course, it was one of many spankings that she started to get because her mother was horrified by what she said. But later, at 11, she was in a theater company, of all things, acting. And the woman, Dorothy Lamas, she was very well known as a theater coach, and she had a stock company in the Midwest. She called her Barbara in and basically said to her, "You can see the aura, can't you?"
She knew. How did she know?
Because she was clairvoyant, too. And Barbara's reaction was, "Is that what it's called?" She didn't even have a name for it. Now, this was long before all this stuff was popular. And she said, "Yes, I can see the aura. My mother, my grandmother, they were all hermetic scientists, which is one of the most ancient mystical arts. And we'd like to teach you about your skill." And so she started teaching Barbara. She had these handwritten, you know, books. Unfortunately, you can't get them in stores or on Amazon. But they were talking about the interpretation of these colors. So what you were asking there, that came from that time. And it's been, of course, corroborated through many years of work. But now she had the key. So, oh, lemon yellow. Oh, okay, that means this person has a good mind. They have good powers of concentration. They can focus. See, now the interpretation was unlocked. And I'm so glad you brought up about the color chart, because that's what we should focus on. You know, we can look at these and we can say, all right, you know, I got angry today. So maybe I do have a little bit of that dark red energy. I need to work on that.
Does the aura determine your personality?
It reflects your personality.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it reflects you. So if I'm not a good person, it's gonna be there. If I steal and cheat, Barbara's joke is don't buy a car from someone wearing avocado green. They'll try to cheat you.
She might be right. Hey, Dimitri, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back with Barbara as well as we talk more about change your aura, change your life. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dimitri Moraitis with us. Change Your Aura, Change Your Life. And also the co-author of the book, Barbara Martin, is with us for a bit. She is among the foremost of clairvoyants and metaphysicians. She's a teacher as well. She's known as the Mozart of metaphysics. That's a great title, Barbara. How'd you get that?
Just thought of it.
Well, actually, people were calling her that because of her talents.
I love that. Barbara, tell me a little bit about your work as a spiritual clairvoyant.
Well, I started working with the spiritual teachings, classes, and workshops, and it grew from there.
But you were born this way, weren't you?
Yes. I could see my mother's aura.
When you look at an aura, if you look at one where someone's really sick, do they feel that way, or is this is something that's going to happen to them?
Well, there's a lot of gray in the aura, and this reveals that they're sick.
And it could even show the gray around the particular organ where the distress is.
And Dimitri, let me ask you this. When you have been working in this field, what has come across that really bothered you in this event? I mean, has there anything that has gone wrong?
You mean in doing this work?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if I would say wrong. I mean, it's a field where you're working with people that their whole purpose is to better themselves. So that's an exciting thing to happen. It doesn't, though. Some people think when you do this, your life automatically becomes simple and easy and everything's happy. There's been plenty of challenges. I would say the biggest thing is just to establish these teachings, because you're kind of in a society that doesn't quite accept it. You know, people are learning more. I would say our biggest challenge, or one of our goals of the Institute, is to reassign metaphysics its proper place in the study of human knowledge and understanding and, you know, what it means to be a human. So if there's been any challenge, it's been to really kind of make that clear and to try to break through to more people that really would benefit by this.
Barbara, are you finding that more and more people are becoming spiritual? They're becoming more aware of the things you've been practicing?
Yes, they are.
What's causing that?
The energy field itself.
Is it opening up?
Yes, it's building up.
And it's sort of the age of the society that we're in, too. For a long time, Barbara's been talking about a coming spiritual renaissance. And it's just starting to show up. And the beautiful thing is there's no, you know, it's not really one person or one place in the world. It's sort of happening everywhere. It's sort of like a new grass that's growing in the world.
We've got a lot of people, Dimitri, who own pets. And they want to know, do their pets possess auras, too?
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And by the way, when you love your pet, it's not just about hugs and kisses, shall we say. There's a soul in that body, and it's going through an evolution just like you are. And as you're helping that animal, you're transferring some energy there, and it's literally helping that animal to evolve. So we do have a responsibility as humans to help, you know, the animal kingdom, to treat it right. The domestication of animals is actually a good thing when it's done right. It can really help the animal to evolve.
These animals are sometimes people, because if you believe in reincarnation, who knows what's there, right?
Well, the Kabbalistic axiom says a plant becomes an animal, a mineral becomes a plant, an animal, a man, and a man, a god. So, yes, at one point you could say we were in the animal kingdom, but now we've gone beyond that. So while we can have animal characteristics, we'll experience many things, you know, in the reincarnation stage of human. Actually, the first time we were on your show some years ago was talking about reincarnation and how really we've had many, many lives on this earth, and we've been many different kinds of personalities, rich, poor, successful, male, female, the various races, the various religions. The whole idea is to kind of experience it all.
And the title, of course, called Change Your Aura, Change Your Life. Barbara, how do you change your aura? How do you go from, let's say, if you look at the illustrations, these darker colors that aren't very good, how do you become more illuminated? How do you do that?
Well, your energy field tells you where you're at. And you work with it, and you expand in the light rays.
Right. So there's basically two ways you do change your aura. One we've been doing from the beginning of time, which has been through every good word, thought, act, and deed. So every positive thing we do has actually enhanced and elevated our aura, even if we're not getting patted on the back for it. And the other is through meditation. You can call on these energies, infuse your aura with them, and as you express them in your life, you will improve your aura.
Right.
Yeah. You've heard that story of Edgar Casey getting on an elevator, and he looked at all the people in there, and he didn't see any auras at all, and he frightened them, and he backed off, and the elevator broke, people plunged. Is that a true story or a myth?
No, I think that was a true story. Probably what he was seeing there was when the person is getting ready to pass on, the energies do start to withdraw. Now, in that case, it must have been the higher knew that these people were getting ready to transfer over and were probably helping them to prepare. What would you say, Barbara?
Yes.
That would be So, and you've seen that too, haven't you, Barbara? When somebody's dying, the energies start to withdraw.
Yes.
It's a natural thing.
It cut loose from the astral body.
Right. We have this astral form. And actually, that's the real definition of death. You know, when the astral body is loosened from the physical, that's it. You know, you can be in a coma. You can be, you know, flatlined. You know, you can go through a near-death experience. But as long as the astral body still is connected to the physical, we haven't really died yet. But when that disconnection starts to happen, that's it. There's no going back.
When you look at a dead body, Dimitri, does it have an aura at all?
A dead body?
Yes.
No, it loses the aura.
It's not there at all.
Yeah. No.
Sometimes, you know, it takes, though, a little while to disengage everything, which is why the higher tells us when somebody dies, it's best to wait 72 hours before you bury or cremate them to allow for this full disengagement of the energy field.
Well, I got to tell you, because I have studied this field since I was a kid. And truly, you two are absolutely right, where if you change your aura, you do change your life. I mean, it is a very powerful tool. If you're into it, if people are into spirituality and they understand how this whole system works in the universe, then they can tap into this area. And I think, Dimitri, people use this. People who get it, they use this to enhance their life, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the whole point. You know, whether they're very conscious of it or they have an intuition about it, they realize there's a greater force working with them, and they learn to work in cooperation with it. Even look at, like, some of, let's say, take a Beethoven. You know, they say you would have lunch with a guy. Right in the middle of lunch, he'd get this wild look in his eyes. You knew some musical idea was coming to him, and he'd say, you know, lunch over, I got to go. He learned to listen to that higher part of him, and he completely relied on it. And that's what we have to do more. A lot of the times, you know, God talks to all of us every day. The higher energies are coming down to us every day. But too many times we don't pay attention to it. And that's where we lose out. So part of the job of meditation is to become like a receiving station, to be ready to receive these higher energies so that when they're infused with us, we can start to use them.
When someone is evil, whatever they may do, murderers, you name it, what's that aura, Dimitri, look like?
Well, of course, it does depend on whether it was, you know, a rash act or whether it was cold-blooded murder. Anything like that obviously degrades the auric field. If you steal, it degrades the auric field. If you murder, it's a heavy negative energy. Barbara was talking about one time she was doing a lecture, and she noticed, well, you're talking about the black energy, she noticed this black energy in this gentleman's aura next to a woman that she knew, a niece. It turned out to be his niece. And she picked up he was planning to murder his wife. And, you know, she alerted the niece, and it actually turned out to be true. There was a lot going on there. And how that energy shows in your aura. You can't lie in your aura. If it's there, it's there. If it's not there, it's not there. You know, you can pretend you're the greatest person on earth, you know, But if the energy's in your aura, it's there, and if it's not, it's not. So that's the beauty of the aura, is that it really does reveal the truth about people.
Does a person who might be a good person, but they're psychic vampires, energy sappers, as I call them, what does their aura look like?
Well, that's actually a lower energy, too, because what's happening is, yes, you're absolutely right, and we have to be careful there, because people either intentionally or unintentionally can pull on your energy, can try to, let's say, okay, George, you've got this, you're feeling great, you've got all this light, and I come to you and I'm feeling low. You know, I can start to unconsciously pull on your energy, and we're not supposed to allow that. We do have, nothing can enter our aura unless we permit it to happen on some level. So if you feel, it's just like, you know, when you talk to a friend and you're feeling great and they're down, and by the end of the conversation they're saying, oh, thank you so much, I feel so much better, and you're, you know, ready to collapse, it's because they did pull on your energy. You can ask for you can protect your aura, you can put golden light around your aura to protect it, and you can just silently say, you know, if you feel that tug, say, no, I'm refusing this. Let them receive from their own higher what they need, but not to take it from me. You know, that energy is the most valuable thing we possess, is our light. It's not our money, it's not our fame, it's not our fortune, it's our light, because that's what we're going to take to the other side with us. You were just talking about the Edgar Cayce, the light withdrawing. It wasn't disappearing, it was withdrawing. And that's what happens. We'll take our light with us to the other side. So we have to be very careful of that light. Now, on the other hand, there can be some wonderful experiences with other people where there's a positive exchange of energy.
Where does karma come into this?
Well, karma, of course, is fascinating. Karma is a Sanskrit word meaning action. So what happens is, if I, let's say I have a dark thought, and then I act out on that thought, it's a disturbing energy, it's going to create a disturbing action, and that will create a karmic effect.
Like you bring harm to somebody.
Right.
Okay.
I hate that person, you know, and I'm going to get them, yeah. You know, that kind
of thing. And you do get them.
And you do get them, and now you're accountable for it, because you've disturbed their natural flow of what their life was meant to be. So you can't really, you know, the soul, you can't kill the soul, but when you kill somebody, you deprive them of what they came to Earth to achieve. And guess what? You take on their karma. You're going to have to come back another time with them and help them finish what you denied them because of what you did.
I've always been told, Dimitri, that if you do something bad, it comes back tenfold and gets you.
Right.
Is that true?
Yes, yes. As a lesson, not as necessarily as a punishment, but to teach the soul that wasn't such a great idea to kill that person. You know, you have to go through the experiences to know. And again, if you spill the milk, you have to clean it up. You know, if someone steals $100,000 from me, you got to pay it back with interest.
Well, that old saying, what goes around comes around, is pretty true, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, that's why you want to be accountable for your, you know, think before you leap. You know, is this a win-win situation? Many times we act impulsively and we just want what we want. We don't care the repercussions of it. We just so focused on that. We need to step back and say, is this good for everybody concerned?
How does somebody change their aura, and then how do they even know what color they might be?
Well, what we say in the book is start by taking kind of an inventory of yourself, just character qualities in your life. Take a survey, even like for a week, and don't judge yourself. Don't try to change anything. Just kind of almost like be your own observer. And if you take, let's say, a log and you look back at the week and you say, my God, I got angry 5 times this week. Well, maybe then I got to work on anger. Maybe I do kind of have a short fuse at times.
And do you look at the color chart?
Right, and then you say, okay, well, I'll probably have that vitiated red, not a pretty color, you know. And yeah, it can be like firecracker energies like we show in the book if it's really violent anger. If it's irritation, it shows up as these little sparkles of light.
I want to be electric blue.
Yeah, oh, your talent. Well, yeah. You know, it's so interesting. You know, we were in L.A. for years. We just recently moved to North San Diego County to open up our new center.
Okay.
And a lot of people would come, you know, actors and No, to be very honest, if the energy is not quite there, the electric blue, it says, well, you need to take more time to develop your skills. You know, and as you take the time, you'll build the energy in your aura and it'll show up in your life. But yeah, if you have a creative urge, we tell everybody, you know, there's a whole division in your aura that's just for creative expression, whether it's inventive, whether it's artistic, and we're supposed to be creative. So if you like to sing, sing. If you like to dance, dance. You know, you need to let that part of you express itself. You know, it's too bad in schools a lot of the arts have been taken away because it's kind of like depriving us of kind of being a well-rounded person. And there's a reason we need to be creative as well as technological.
Can you see auras?
I'm learning right now. I'm learning. Barbara's been in a very intense training period with me, and yes, things are starting to happen. It's a very difficult venture, I'll tell you. I wasn't born that way like Barbara was, but I was having these other experiences. I was calling them my moments of inspiration, these sort of heightened levels of awareness, and that led to my own spiritual awakening. And then I started working with these energies, and yes, other things did start to happen. But we say clairvoyance is a byproduct of your spiritual evolution. As you work on yourself and elevate, then these other things do start to kick into gear. And I must say, I'm extremely fortunate to work with someone like Barbara, because when you're around someone that gifted, you know, things can't help but rub off. And not just for me, but for others that have been around her, you know, that their own natural clairvoyance gets intensified and they start to see more and more colors and things. And it's just a reinforcement of how valuable this work really is.
Can you have many colors? I mean, what if somebody is got courage, got talent, powers of concentration? These are three different colors. Do they have those all at one time?
Sure. You're sure, yeah, because if you're a confident person, let's say you're going out and you're really doing what you need to be doing in your creative field, then you'll have the talent and the confidence. So those things will both be there. Some people are very creative, but they don't have the confidence. They're not sure about themselves. So maybe the gold won't be there. Or there are others that are very confident, but maybe not quite that talented. You know, so it's not about they're willing to get out there, but they need to develop more of their skills. So that's the beauty of this. No two auras are alike. It's like snowflakes. So there's all these variations in here, and that's what makes characters so interesting and our lives so interesting, because we do have this panoply. You know, we're like a jewel of many facets, and we've got to fashion each side of the jewel.
All right, we're going to come back and take some phone calls with you, Dimitri, in our final hour. Change your aura, folks. Change your life.